Late Night Live. Ideas and opinions from around the world.
G'day, beloved listeners, and Horace is right, ideas and opinions from around the world, and we send them out again, normally from the palatial surroundings of a studio in Sydney, but tonight I'm in the more modest accommodations provided at Muswellbrook in the Upper Hunter. Muswellbrook is right in the middle of one of the world's biggest areas of coal mining. We're surrounded by coal mines in every direction, and about 10 years ago I discovered that one was planned for almost next door to where I live in the upper Hunter. And I've spent the day, it's been going on for 10 years, this debate, and I spent today, amongst others, giving evidence about it. And I think I won the case, you see. I explained to the distinguished gentleman sitting in judgment that if the mine goes ahead, it will, in fact, the crater will turn into Vesuvius and the entire district will all be cooked, baked in our beds, pretty much like Pompeii or Herculaneum. That didn't seem to be entirely sufficient, so then I said, well, if they dig a bigger black hole, it will become a black hole, and New South Wales and Australia and the planet and the entire galaxy will vanish within it. Now, I think that's a pretty good argument, and I hope it proved conclusive. What are we going to do tonight? We're going to be talking to Charles Stewart, who's an energetic Australian journo, who tells an extraordinary story about his dad. In fact, he thinks the story of his father is his best story ever in a long career. It's certainly a classic case of something being stranger than fiction, because what Charles thought he knew about his father turned out to be entirely, well, almost entirely, untrue. But first of all, the future of conservatism in Australia. I'm fascinated by terms, definitions. What does Christian mean, for example? It means everything from the KKK blokes in bed sheets who burn crosses on the front lawns of terrified black families to the majesty of the Vatican. It means, for example, look at the popes. Even they are profoundly different. John 23, hardly recognisable as in the manifestations of John Paul and the incumbent. And so the term Christianity hides a multitude of sins, well, let's put it differently, virtues and vices, and ditto for conservative. When I think of the United States, I think of, well, at the one end of the scale, the distinguished William F. Buckley Jr. I once appeared on his television show. Two, say, Rush Limbaugh and Sarah Palin. And I would have thought the spectrum of what passes for conservatism is almost as broad in Australia. So that's what we're going to look at. What does conservative mean in the Australian context, and where is it heading? Now, to help shed some light on this and to look at the current state of play, I'm joined by a bloke who's written a quarterly essay on the subject, Waleed Ali. Waleed is also a lecturer in politics at Monash and contributes to many a publication, both here and abroad. And Waleed joins us from the Melbourne studio. Welcome. And at home in Adelaide, where he's just returned from the continent, we have someone who's becoming a bit of a regular, Alexander Downer, who, you'll recall, comes from a long line of what we would term conservatives. His grandpa, Sir John, and we spoke about on the show last year, was one of the inaugural senators for South Australia, twice premier, with the Conservative and Protectionist parties. His dad, Sir Alec Downer, became a Member of Parliament for the newly established and oddly named Liberal Party and was Immigration Minister for 5 years. Alexander joined the Libs, was a member for 24 years, during which time he was a leader of the opposition, and then 11 years as the Foreign Minister in the Howard government. And he now spends, as we've discussed previously, a lot of his time as the UN envoy for Cyprus. Waleed and Alexander, welcome. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Now, Waleed, before we get into the discussion, help me out of my dilemmas. Would you define what you think a conservative is?
Well, when I approach that sort of question, I'm approaching it in a
from the perspective of conservatism as a philosophical political tradition. And in that sense, my understanding of conservatism is that it describes not an ideology, but a disposition, as the conservative philosopher Michael Oakeshott called it, a disposition, an approach to change and the regulation of change in society, and particularly an understanding of the nature of human beings and of human society.
Well, that's what I used to think it meant, Waleed, and conservatives, therefore, didn't like social change to be too rapid. They liked it to evolve rather majestically.
And there were very good philosophical grounds for making that argument. The basic understanding was that society and human affairs were so unfathomably complex, so far beyond the capacity of any human being to grasp, that we were much better off placing our trust in, I guess, in tradition and institutions that had evolved slowly over time with all their foibles, but the fact that they had emerged organically gave them a certain value in their own right, whereas the idea that I'm calling progressive, which is that the world with its problems needs to be remade in accordance with some kind of ideal.
Well, don't rush ahead. We've got tons of time to talk about this.
Philip,
now, you say that it's that in its purest or traditional forms it isn't an ideology. Does it not become one when you put neo in front of it?
Well, neoconservative, yeah. My essential argument is that neoconservatism is something different from conservatism, that doesn't resonate with the conservative philosophical tradition in the way that one might assume, merely by virtue of the fact that neoconservatives usually belong to what we call the conservative side of politics. I think when we call it neoconservative for a reason, and that is that it is a return to but a slight alteration of conservatism. And it's something that, in my view, actually brings together elements of conservatism with elements of progressivism and, in some cases, radicalism, to combine to form a new political force that is actually something that's distinct from what we've seen before.
Now, before we go to Alexander, Waleed, I like using the term paleoconservative, but let's not introduce that. But there are a few others. There's liberal and neoliberal.
Yes.
Would you be kind enough to explain that to the gladies and the potties?
Liberalism, from which obviously we get liberal, really relates to a philosophical tradition, the most famous proponent of whom is John Stuart Mill, who wrote On Liberty. And the central idea is that there is a belief really in the primacy of the individual and the liberty of the individual over the collective. This might sound like an idea that's very familiar to us now, but it's actually quite a radical idea at the time that John Stuart Mill was talking about it. Not that it was new at the time, but just that it was radical, because it implies really that the role of government and the expectations of society should be that authority expresses the majority's will. John Stuart Mill was essentially arguing that what we should be doing is the reverse, that is protecting the individual from the tyranny of the majority, from majoritarian will. And so their structures of power should really be aligned in such a way that individual liberty is enhanced, that people have the freedom to be different.
Look, I agree with that, and the sooner we get rid of the Rudd government, the better. Alexander, welcome to the conversation. I'd like to look at your family. I would have thought that Grandpa and Father were very classical conservatives.
Well, I think this term, I mean, this could descend into just a debate about semantics, but this term has...
It will be a debate about semantics.
well, it probably will, and it will make it all the more interesting. But this debate about the meaning of these words can't be taken out of a historical context. So, for example, if you take Edmund Burke as perceived to be one of the fathers of conservatism, then his context was revolution in France and revolution in Europe, and the argument that evolution was better than revolution, to simplify it. And conservatives have often been seen as people, well, progressive is of course a very positive way of putting it, a negative way of putting it is socialists and radicals who want to who want completely to transform society through revolution or other methods, but particularly through revolution. And conservatives are people who say, whoa, no, let's not do it that way. Let's just let society evolve. Then there's the debate about the meaning of liberalism. Well, in Australia, if you're a liberal, you belong to a political party or you support a political party. Liberalism in America means you're centre-left. You're a bit like Labour here in Australia. In Europe, liberalism has much more of the classic meaning that Waleed was just talking about, and that is people who believe in the notion, the John Stuart Mill notion of individual liberty, individual rights, and the primacy of the individual, and society should be structured in such a way that it allows individuals to play out their visions and dreams in their own way, and government should be kept to a minimum. That has a role, obviously, but it should be kept to a minimum. And I think nowadays, since we're not on the verge of any social revolution, so the earlier meaning, the sort of 18th and 19th century meaning of conservatism tends not to be so significant.
Now, as you know, Alexander, you're amongst friends. Almost everyone who listens to this program is neoconservative. Where are you on the spectrum? Are you paleo, neo?
Well, it's an interesting question in this respect, that in the United Nations context, when I'm sitting around talking with people from many countries and many cultures, In a sense, I'd never describe myself as a conservative. I mean, for example, fundamentalist religious people, fundamentalist Muslims and Christians and so on, I often think of as extremely conservative people. The Saudi Arabian government would be a very good example of a very conservative government. I couldn't be further away from them. No, I would be much more in the European sense, a liberal. In a John Stuart Mill sense, a liberal, somebody who believes in the primacy of the individual and individual rights and the capacity of individuals to make decisions about their own lives rather than the state doing so. And I think many people, not all by the way, but many people in the Liberal Party of Australia would pretty much hold that view.
Now, Waleed, I want you to take this copy of John Stuart Mill in your left hand and tell me to define your political leanings. Where are you on the spectrum?
You mean with reference to the terms that we've already discussed, or just generally? It's a difficult question.
No, for practical 21st century Australian purposes, I know you've got a great sympathy to the traditions of conservatism, but, you know, where would you place yourself?
Well, there roughly. I do have a sympathy for the philosophical tradition of conservatism and the understandings of human society and human nature that are involved in that. And what comes along with conservatism, particularly once you hit the 20th century, is the conservatism kind of has a disposition that inclines towards liberalism. So I do believe in the importance of individual rights and the ability of the individual to remain free from majoritarian tyranny. Those are my dispositions.
Okay. Now, Waleed, before Alexander gets cross with me for just mucking around with definitions,
yes,
I would like to ask you this: do you think the liberal conservative tradition is salvageable in the 21st century? Because things seem to be changing so fast. Evolution's not really the issue. It is revolutionary in its speed.
Yeah, this is a concern for me. Certainly in the classical sense, I'm not terribly optimistic about the future of the liberal conservative tradition. If the liberal conservative tradition is to survive, it will do so, I think, in a mutated and, in my view, impoverished form. And one of the reasons for that is a concept that we haven't actually discussed yet, which is, of course, neoliberalism, which is distinct, in my view, from liberalism, but which has a kind of revolutionary character to it, by really reconstructing society and notions of society around logic that is analogous to the market, not confined just to the economic concept of the market, but really using the market as a political philosophy. And this idea, which of course became popular through the Thatcher and Reagan governments and then in Australia through the Howard government, and really before that with the Hawke and Keating governments, this sort of idea sets in motion a series of social processes that really connote rapid change and irreversible change. And so what I fear is that as a result of the upheaval that sort of ideological persuasion brings with it, you get a kind of conservative reaction in the social realm that is anything but the liberal conservative tradition. And here I'm thinking in the last decade or so of the kinds of conversations we've had about the values that people must accept in order to be part of the nation. This sort of idea that we have a nation that believes in X values and you really must
that
believe in those values.
That was very much a Howard proposition, wasn't it, Wanny?
Well, the Howard government was really driving that in Australia, but it was a worldwide phenomenon. This was something that was occurring from governments throughout the Western world, particularly in Europe. It struck me as a very European discourse. And I think the thing about that discourse is, well, I can understand the anxiety that a lot of people who would call themselves social conservatives may have had with the rapid changes in society, particularly in the cultural realm that we'd experienced. The problem is that in classical terms, that's actually quite an illiberal stance. I mean, I think of a particular statement that Brendan Nelson made when he was in the midst of his tirade about Simpson and his donkey, which you might remember. And he made this quite extraordinary statement, I thought, where he said, "We don't care where you come from and what you believe, but if you're going to be in Australia, we expect you to accept these values."
You'd echo that position, wouldn't you, Alexander?
Yes. I mean, one of the things I would say about so-called conservatives or liberal conservatives, however you would like to term it, is conservatives generally, if you like, in Europe, I've got a lot of experience of this in recent times, tend to be, amongst a whole lot of other things, I mean, they're anti-socialist and anti-totalitarian and so on, they do tend to be more nationalist than multilateralist, actually. You do find, for example, and this is a tiny example, but you find in southeastern Europe, which I'm very familiar with, the people who are described as the conservatives might not be conservative in the sense we understand it, but they are almost to a person nationalists, and sometimes, by the way, quite extreme nationalists. So
that's a paradox, isn't it, Alexander, in our century, given that the borders seem to be going down and globalisation is the mantra?
I don't think it is a paradox. I think it reflects the fact that we believe in this country that's not such an issue anymore, and we're all sort of connected into the global economy and so on. But when you get particularly to the Middle East or southeastern Europe, which are, there are deep conflicts in those societies, conservatives, as they would self-define, conservatives are often people who are more chauvinistic, if you like. And that's why I personally wouldn't particularly identify myself with them. But they are very chauvinistic. In Cyprus, for example, the conservatives are the people who fly the flag for Greek or Turkish nationalism, as against people who are more either liberal or progressive, who believe, in different ethnic groups working together. But this is, of course, a very big issue in many parts of the world, and it's much less of an issue here in Australia for obvious reasons.
Let's look at it through another prism, Willie. Mm-hmm. It always fascinated me, going back decades, that conservatives weren't into conservation in the sense of environmentalism. And now it seems to me this is a fracture line for conservatives around the world, that they don't really know how to respond to this extraordinary issue of climate change. You've got some pretty interesting views on this.
Yeah, well, my view on why it is that people that we call conservatives now have a problem responding to climate change and find it difficult is that they're not thinking as conservatives. They're thinking ultimately as neoliberals. And the two are actually very different ideas and, in my view, sit in quite demonstrable contradiction. For the neoliberal, I mean, remember that the central idea of neoliberalism is not just a belief that the free market is a good thing. Lots of people believe that. But a belief that it really should be our animating political philosophy. and that the results of the free market are themselves politically justified in philosophical terms. So if we ultimately don't think about terms like justice except through what the market delivers us, for example, that approach, it really butts up very hard against a challenge like climate change. Because
climate change is very embarrassing, isn't it? Because it says
it's a problem.
The free market wasn't a roaring success in this issue, at least.
Right. It's what it does is it points to what we might call one massive externality in the context of the free market. Now, for a neoliberal who is conditioned to believe that the market itself is a sufficient philosophical guide to our politics, not just our economy, but to our politics, you face a difficult situation because the neoliberal has to either deal with the fact that that process has precipitated such a potentially calamitous problem, and that doesn't fit with neoliberal ideology. So the choice really is to deny it, deny climate change is a problem, or find some other way around it by saying it might be real, but it's not man-made, or some other response, or to forego neoliberalism. It's very difficult to sustain the two together. Now, because in the last three decades, conservative political parties have become so avowedly neoliberal in their approach, it's meant that climate change is an extraordinarily difficult thing for them to attack. And that is, to me, an odd result if you go back to conservatism, because conservatism as a political philosophy should be entirely comfortable with, firstly, the concept of conservation. I mean, the idea that environmental degradation in the name of economic progress might be a bad thing strikes me as actually quite a conservative idea to articulate. The idea that we need to be careful about wreaking havoc when we do these things because we're not exactly sure how bad the results are going to be. But further to that, I think there's the point about climate change is that it's an issue that imposes upon us or demonstrates to us our limits, the limits of human capacity, the limits of economic growth, the concept of trade-offs, that we can't just do things forever, progress perpetually, and expect there to be no consequences.
Well, Lee,
and
that is
should understand
argued.
That very, very well.
That is beautifully argued, and I want to get Alexander back. Alexander, do you have difficulties, philosophic difficulties, with climate change yourself?
No, not at all. Actually, I think this is a kind of monstrous, if I could use the word, a monstrous reconstruction of conservative politicians around the world. If I think about conservative politicians, I mean, the first person who momentarily comes to mind is David Cameron, the leader of the British Conservative Party.
Or perhaps Arnie Schwarzenegger in California.
Well, I mean, yes, if you think he's a conservative, I mean, he's a Republican. David Cameron, Schwarzenegger, Margaret Thatcher, her then Environment Secretary Gummer. These people have been very, very strong on the issue of climate change.
Well, Margaret Thatcher closed the coal industry down. I wish she'd come to New South Wales.
Well, yes, you would like that.
I'd love it. She could stay overnight at the farm.
I'm quite familiar with your project there, but that's another story. It's not true that people who at least regard themselves as conservatives universally aren't interested in climate change. Malcolm Turnbull was the leader of the Liberal Party until recently, and for him it was a crusade. For David Cameron, it's a crusade. I mean, Margaret Thatcher was, I think, pretty much the first well-known and significant politician who really made a significant issue of the question of climate change. So Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, Nicolas Sarkozy, give you a long list.
You've made your point. I'd like to take another area, if you wouldn't
mind.
Could I just make a quick response to that?
Quickly.
Yeah. In that respect, I think Thatcher is rather an exceptional person and deserves a great deal of respect because she actually is one of the leading neoliberals who has responded to climate change. But the other leaders that we're talking about that are conservative, I think are very difficult to put in the neoliberal approach to conservatism basket. I mean, David Cameron doesn't speak like a neoliberal at all. In fact, is distancing himself in his rhetoric from neoliberal discourse. Malcolm Turnbull, for example, did want to respond to climate change, but his response was an interesting one. It was through an ETS that was ultimately heavily defanged. And if a neoliberal is going to respond to climate change, then it strikes me that exactly the way they will do it is by constructing an ETS, by creating a market in what are essentially permits to pollute. That's the way that a neoliberal would approach the issue. Okay. I'm not quite sure that's exactly the same way as a classical conservative might approach the issue.
We now don't have the time to go through the interesting detour that I wanted, which was into drug policy, which I think is another area internationally conservatives have a problem. And I have the greatest admiration for William F. Buckley Jr., who said the war on drugs is lost, and he said that 20 years ago. But instead, let's, Alexander, to you, I would have thought that one of the problems for an Australian conservative of any sort is that along came an increasingly conservative Labor Party, and that in many ways Hawke, Keating and now Rudd, you know, sort of pulled the rug from under you a bit.
Well, no, so a lot of those people we defeated in the end. So, and Rudd we haven't yet, but his popularity is falling like a stone. So I wouldn't give up there either. Look, you're right, and to be serious, it's an important point that you make, a very important point, that the Labor Party, the party of once would have regarded themselves as socialists, democratic socialists, social democrats.
Wash your mouth out, Alexander. You can't say things like that.
I mean, I admire the way. I admire the way that they have adopted so much of the philosophy and the policy practice of their political opponents, which at the end of the day is a great tribute to their political opponents. But
Ed, you tackle this now in the couple of minutes we've got left. This is a big issue.
Well, I'm not sure exactly how you want me to tackle this.
Well, I mean, your response is the same thing. I would suggest, and most people would, that in Rudd and certainly with Keating and Hawke, you had people who really facilitated the free market to quite an extent.
Yes, but I guess my argument is that that's a different thing from saying that they're conservative. I think what is definitely true is that the Labor Party was the party ultimately that was responsible for introducing the idea, the concepts, the central concepts of neoliberalism into Australia. And when that happened, of course, the then opposition, the coalition, were in a tricky sort of situation, and there were a lot of internal pyrotechnics resulting in leadership changes. Okay.
That's not what happened. I think I was after all part of all of this. I think there was a real generational change. I think this was not about politics and political ideology. It was about economics. And I think in the end, if you like, internationally, not just in Australia, the intellectual economic debate about the role of the market was very much won by pro-market people. So actually, during the Fraser years, this debate within the Liberal Party was a very hot debate, and the Fraser government was extremely divided over this issue of the market, and of course the Hawke government was as well.
Look, we're running out of time. I'm going to put the last question to you, Waleed, and how shall I phrase it? Is the word conservative sufficiently meaningful to still deploy, or do you favour a new form of descriptive?
I think conservative is a term that retains its meaning provided we're clear about what we mean by it. And I think if we return to the original concept of conservatism being about an approach to change and then assess things in that light, we might actually have a really interesting and useful discussion about what it is and is not conservatism. I worry, though, about the conflation of conservatism with other concepts like neoliberalism that conservatives may have adopted, but which are conceptually distinct.
Look, thank you both very much, Alexander Downer and Waleed Ali from Monash. And I'm going to put exactly the same questions next week to Sarah Palin. This is Late Night Live on ABC Radio National, Radio Australia, etc. A little bit of music and then the most extraordinary revelations about a bloke's dad.